Welcome to the Two Vets Talk Pets podcast, hosted by veterinarians Dr. Lewis Kirkham and Dr. Robbie Anderton, who'll give you the inside scoop on the secret lives of your pets and have a light-hearted look at the latest animal news, health tips, and other random facts. All names of people and pets have been changed for confidentiality, so if a story sounds familiar, don't flatter yourself. Every owner is just as animal crazy as you are. So sit down, place your furry, feathered or scaly best friend on your lap, and it's over to Lewis and Robbie.
Welcome, listeners, to episode 210 of the Two Vets Talk Pets podcast. Dr. Lewis Kirkham, a veterinarian and perhaps a behaviour veterinarian, one might say. And I'm joined this week by my wife, Deb, who's a medical scientist and former lab manager of clinical pathology at the Vet School, the University of Melbourne Vet School down at Werribee. Welcome, Deb.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon, exactly. Very much so, good afternoon. And anything particular in your week you'd like to bring up to kick us off? Anything come to mind?
Anything at all. Yeah. Well, is this the eve of All Hallows Eve for those who are interested in Halloween, which is tomorrow?
Yeah.
So, yes, that's probably what I'm gearing up for currently.
31st of October. Well, yes, that's a good... There was a Halloween parade down Bay Street in Port Melbourne on the weekend, which was very well attended. I saw lots of dogs dressed up in their Halloween costumes. It was quite interesting.
Yes, I heard it was huge. Mm. So that's good.
Mm. Lots of people and kids and certainly we were giving out treats at the vet clinic as part of a trick or treat. Not sure what happens when we run out, what the tricks would be. Maybe it's a dog poo on the front doorstep, probably. I imagine if we ran out of dog treats, it'd be a wee and a poo on the front step, do you?
Whose trick is that for?
if we ran out of treats, or maybe they'd come in to the clinic, do one in the consult room. That's always a fun one. Yeah, you've got four or five owners in the consult room and a large Rottweiler that the size it doesn't like the floor and does a steaming pile. It really gets the smells happening.
Well, you know, Halloween can be quite controversial. People think it's a bit commercialised and all of those sorts of things. And as someone who's actually American by birth, I really do love Halloween. And the reason I love it in, you know, modern day Australian culture is because it's one of the few things that get people out, particularly our children, and going door to door to people's houses. Now, I think adult supervision is important for young children, but I think, you know, when I was a child, we used to always be at other people's houses in our street, or you were selling raffle tickets, you were doing fundraising kind of things where you were always talking to your neighbours, whereas our kids never really did that until they did Halloween. And so it's really good to see communities out and about and doing this kind of thing like the Halloween walk. So I think it's a good positive thing for our communities.
Yeah, but if you go to the Apple store, though, there is an app that you can get, a trick or treating app just to bypass all that. Just I'm pretty sure there's an app about it.
We don't put out treats for dogs. Maybe we should do that.
Well, it's interesting. The Halloween stuff with dogs is certainly, as far as owners are concerned, with dogs, it is really important that you do make sure that you keep your dog secure during that period of time. There's a lot of opening of the front door and also a lot of kids dressed in weird, or adults as well, I suppose, dressed in very weird costumes that a lot of dogs get very frightened by.
Yes.
And very, very scared of the appearance of weird-looking things. There's often a few dog bites that occur. So make sure to keep your dog secure sort of at the back of the house, away from the front door, so that there's no chance of getting spooked by, a ghoulish-looking child or...
I hadn't thought of that, but that's so true. Mm. I can remember once we went to a fancy dress. The theme was Music Through the Ages, and I went as Amy Winehouse, which is very different to how I usually look, in my black beehive wig and all these tattoos.
Yes, a few stickers.
Yeah, all these tats. And Olive, our cat, was really freaked out because she thought, that sounds like mum, but that doesn't look like mum. So that's a really important consideration.
Yeah, definitely. And then there's also a little bit of, you know, talking about the Halloween, the costume wearing, there's a bit of, a bit of controversy with dressing up our animals as well, that we're sort of anthropomorphizing them. And it's important to make sure, I was watching a few dogs walk down the street, and there were quite a few that were walking down the street that had the full sort of body costume on. Maybe they dressed like a pumpkin or something like that. And a lot of dogs, I sort of looked and I thought, you're not very comfortable wearing that outfit if you're doing full body shakes, as we call them. A lot of dogs with their ears back, very reluctant to be wearing. So it's important to make sure your pet is comfortable with wearing a costume. I guess we're not stressing them too much. But then there's a bit of a thing about anthropomorphizing. I have so much trouble with that word.
It went well the first time you said it.
I'll just leave it with what I said the first time. And just that we're trying to, dress them up to look like us and sort of be surrogate little humans in our life. So there's a little bit of that. But, I think as long as your pet's comfortable with it and it's not done necessarily that's making them anxious or worrying, it's okay, I think. And important, though, to lock them up when you're having visitors.
Well, the other thing I thought you were going to say then was that there might be a risk of them getting into the treats, particularly chocolates.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
So yeah.
It's that might be another reason to make sure they're well secured and you know where they are, because that would be quite...
Or certainly terrible. I know Robbie, ex-co-host of the podcast.
Oh, stop it.
He wouldn't put out chocolates. He'd put out rum and raisin bars for the kiddies and muesli bars, and they're all healthy stuff. That was nice. So if you are a bit like Dr. Robbie and you're putting out the rum and raisin, don't let the pets eat the raisins.
No.
Only healthy stuff for Robbie, pretty sure.
And on that note also, with the amount of treats, I think what we always used to do was let our girls eat as much as they wanted to on the night of trick or treating. Yes. And the rest of it was stowed away for the next year and put out the next year. They won't notice that those rotten eyeball looking things are out of date next year, will they? No, the kids.
How about when you go on the walk though, and you go and you see some good ones, and you take all the good chocolates and you dump all the not so good ones back in the bowl.
Yeah, that's
that
what
works
I,
well.
That's what I find interesting when you go to check the level in the trick or treat bowl for the treats, and you realise that the kids have dropped off all their whammies and taken the good stuff.
All the out-of-date, chewy, lolly, yuck ones that no one likes. All of Robbie's muesli bars dumped back in our bowl anyway. But we've been busy at work this week. I mean, you had an interesting comment. I said last week I was getting a lot of wildlife at work and you saw some interesting comments about that somewhere.
Well, I think I heard... on the ABC, someone from Wildlife Victoria was talking about how in their 35-year history of Wildlife Victoria taking on little orphans, this was their biggest year, and they'd seen a 55% increase in the number of animals being surrendered, little joeys and kangaroo joeys and baby possums. And I think it was attributed to the weather conditions, because it's been a warm spring. The babies have come early, but the weather conditions and high winds have made it, really unfortunate high incidence of those little orphans being, blown out of nests or perhaps being separated from their mums. So
that's an interesting point, that certainly with baby birds, when they're first fledgling, they're in the nest, they might have a go at, trying to fly, and the first sort of incident they have is doesn't go so well for them. They end up on the ground, and we do get a lot of those brought in, and we sort of look at them and they're just basically a fledgling baby bird. They're totally healthy. So if you do sort of find a bird, certainly you can bring it into the vet clinic, but we will often send it back straight away with the person who's found it and give them instructions how to build what we call a bird bucket.
Oh.
So it's basically where you go to the – because mum and dad will be hanging around.
Yes.
They'll be nearby, even though you might say, I was watching and then, no, mum and dad came around. Well, they're watching too and they're scared of you. So as long as that, you know – so to prevent that bird from being attacked by a cat or a dog or becoming an incident or something, we usually get people to buy a bucket. Just go down Bunnings, buy a couple of dollar bucket, and you put some holes in the bottom of it. So if it rains, the Rona can fall through.
Oh.
Put some grass or some sort of soft bedding in the bottom of it. Maybe a little a stick up the side of it, so the bird can sort of climb up the stick, or mum and dad can climb down to feed mm-hmm. the baby bird, and then just hang it in the tree right nearby where you've basically found it. It's the oh. best chance, because we get so many of those sorts of birds. Wildlife Victoria doesn't have the ability to raise every little pigeon or sparrow, or, you know, as terrible as it sounds.
Mm. And quail.
Quail, that's right, exactly. Emu, we have in Port Melbourne, emus, and a few joeys we've had. No, we haven't had any joeys. But, yeah, no. Yeah, we do push owners. And it's interesting, sometimes we've had a few owners say, no, I'm too busy to do that. And we're like, oh, really? So you're not busy... too busy to bring the bird in, you care enough to do that. Mm. But it's sort of like, here's your problem now. It's like, well, it's very hard for us to find that, you know, we can't really raise all the birds that are brought in. Its best chance is to be with mum and dad. That really is the best thing. So certainly if you find a bird, have a look online, Bird Bucket. I usually do Bird Bucket RSPCA in the Google machine and sort of see what comes up, show you how to build a bird bucket. I was going to say build a snowman. That's yes. a song, isn't it?
No, well, that's a great idea, and it sounds pretty simple.
Mm.
And I think, yes, most of us would like to see these little babies, you know, reunited with their parents or their mother. So that sounds like a really good idea.
Mm. And we've had a couple of stray kittens come in the last few weeks, which have been kind of cute. Next door neighbour's taken one on board, and then I think we still got one at the clinic, but I think there's somebody's, maybe Lucy's taking that one home. And we also had a seagull come in that had swallowed, had a bit of fishing wire coming out of its mouth. And when we're at the back, and Maddie's like, oh, it's not really moving, you know, you don't want to pull it too hard. And we're like, that's not good. And so we actually took an x-ray of it, and it swallowed two fishing hooks that were sort of interconnected. So I think for larger pieces of bait, they sort of entwine hooks. And they were huge. They were, I mean, I don't know, probably the size of your thumb, I suppose,
wow.
sort of those size of hooks. And it swallowed two of them. And very unfortunate outcome for that seagull. There's not a lot we can do when the hooks are stuck down, right down in its stomach.
Mm.
So that was a bit sort of sad. But it's interesting with Wildlife Victoria, you ring them up and you sort of say, oh, we've got a couple of, you know, seagulls that have come in, and then they ring up the next day and they're, those seagulls still there? Yes, no one's picked them up yet. Yep. Oh, you know, we've got a couple of, maybe some possums, I suppose. We do see a lot of possums that come in too. You ring them up, yep, oh, we'll get a carer to you. But you ring them up and you tell them you've got a goshawk or a falcon or anything like that, and they're literally on the front door before you've hung up the phone, yeah. I've got a baby whale that's come in. Oh, they're on the front. Yeah, I've got a penguin. Yeah. So I think they have a little bit selective, which is understandable.
For sure.
When they're
so
busy.
Well, and I can imagine they have limited resources, and so they're probably
True.
Trying to save those for the less common
Yes,
animals
definitely, yeah, exactly. And perhaps the ones that aren't considered pests too, we do,
mm.
do get a lot of pest species, which makes it difficult as well. So a big thank you to our sponsors of the show, Zilkeen. I had a client this week who was driving their cat they were going to do 20 hours straight. It must have been two of them driving together to the Gold Coast. And they were going to take their cat up, and they were very concerned how the cat would go. Never been in the car before, except to come to the vet, which is sort of a 5-minute trip. And they were just sort of worried, you know, how it was going to go. And it's sort of interesting point that, you know, 20 hours is a long time, but I thought probably the cat, if it's in a small enclosure, is probably going to hold on, wee and poo
mm.
for that period of time, as long as they're not too distressed. And I said, look, we can help minimise their distress by starting on some Zilkeen, which is a mild anxiety-lowering medication. Comes in a little capsule you can open. Also comes in little tasty treats as well that you can get too. But in the cat, we said the capsules, and they started about 3 days before their trip. And then we said, look, let's continue about 10 days after you arrive, because obviously there's a lot of transition when you arrive. Cat's got a new house, new environments. You know, you want it as relaxed as it can be. So really good medication, safe. They were traveling in a couple of days, so I knew that was, you know, I was worried about giving them something that was medication-based perhaps,
mm-hmm.
that might have some side effects, whereas Zilkin, I know it's pretty uncommon to have any side effects. It was going to be pretty safe for the transit. So hopefully they made it to the Gold Coast. Haven't heard otherwise. So
I'm sure they did.
Hopefully they've charged through and made the 20-hour trip, which is, I did say in regular stops, so offer food and water, that sort of thing, and just check that the cat hasn't soiled the carrier, I suppose, and clean it up and go from there. Actually, that reminds me as well, I had a rabbit I sent to Malaysia during the week as well. Yeah, I told you about that one. Yeah, that was a first. And they said to me, was there anything that they could give the rabbit? And I don't think there's any sort of studies with the Zilkin. And it was very much on the weekend, so I couldn't investigate. I should have rung the company in the week, but they've already left now. So possibly Zilkin might have been helpful for the rabbit too. I'm not really sure. Also, a big thank you to Delicate Care, our food sponsor. They've got the Australian-made, Australian-owned, made from duck and those baby joeys that didn't make it at the vet clinic.
Stop.
No. It's all ethically sourced. So they've got stuff for the dogs and also some great foods for the cats as well. So go and check it out. Available at your local vet. They've got some dental diets as well, which are really good for keeping your pet's teeth clean. And also our Patreon supporters, really appreciate you guys. Just wonderful you're there all the time, just helping us to encourage us to keep doing it, isn't it, Deb?
Yes.
Definitely. Now, this is an article I saw in The Age. And actually, I think you saw it in The Age and sent it to me. So I'm not sure why I'm reading about it, but it's about...
Well, because this is your podcast.
Well, it's not mine. Well, it is. It's ours,
yours
now.
And yours and Robbie's.
And Robbie is busy baking healthy treats for the trick-or-treaters. Maybe some bran muffins. He's a bit partial to a sourdough bran muffin. That'd go down with the kiddies. They'd enjoy that. Bran and oatmeal muffin.
They might find those all over their lawn later.
Yeah.
They might think, oh, the dog's done a few poos on the lawn, and they realise it's the muffins have been discarded.
I don't reckon they'll be on the lawn. They'll be on the roof. Here's your trick. You can shove your treat up your...
That reminds me, I've got to get my tricks out.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, you've got... I thought the trick was when the homeowner didn't have any treats, then the people knocking on the door played a trick on the homeowner. But it's the other way around.
No. I ask the kids, would they like a trick or a treat? And often I force them to do the trick, which is, you know, I get out my old, rotten old Blunstons that have been in the garage all year.
Yes.
And hopefully there's big...
They're sort of boots for the
overseas listener.
Overseas trick or treaters.
Australian brand of sort of... working boots, leather working boots, and so I like them to be dusty and covered in cobwebs and whatnot, and I force the kids to put their hand in there, right in. I force them, and then so you get these little kids that are absolutely terrified, and I usually have two. One will have a treat in it, like a little piece of, you know, a little lolly or something, and the other one will have a fake spider or a rat in there, is what I do. So you'll get the brave kids who march straight up, but then you've got the other ones who are terrified.
Really terrified.
So.
Well, I normally, for a trick, give them a poo bag and tell them to pick up a poo on the front lawn that some other dogs left behind.
But if you live next door to Robbie, the poo bag would be full of his poo.
All of his oatmeal muffins, you reckon? Come on, kiddies, trying to keep things healthy. You know, we've got to watch our weight these days. Oh, Robbie. Poor guy, he can't answer. Can he?
Well, that'd be the trick.
He's a poo bag with a bran muffin in it. He's like, what's this? What? Stay healthy, kiddies.
No, the trick would be, would you like to eat a
poo? Would you like to eat a poo? And it's a bran muffin. Yes. One of Robbie's sourdough bran and oatmeal muffins. Good for your constitution, I'd say.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Kids would boycott the following year.
Yeah, definitely. Dad, why are we the house with unhealthy, with the healthy treats? All right. So this is an article that was in The Age that, like I said, you sent to me. It's about the cricketer Alyssa Healy, who the title of the article is "Like a Crime Scene, Healy Feared for Career After Dog Bite." And I think the title probably says it all. But Misty and Millie, the two Staffordshire Terriers Healy shares with her cricketer husband Mitchell Stark, were initially jousting playfully. Jousting with the sticks.
The dogs were? Yeah. Or she was?
Her and her husband were jousting.
They were jousting with a couple of cricket bats, weren't they?
How much is he asking? Tell him he's dreaming. The jousting sticks. Yeah.
Maybe. It's a reference to the movie The Castle. It is. For the overseas listener.
Yeah, for the overseas trick or treater. An oatmeal and bran muffin. Oh, they'll know what those
are
overseas.
Of course they do.
Yeah,
they invented the muffin.
Yeah, but they didn't invent the oatmeal. And who invented that one?
That's Dr. Pritikin.
Dr. Robbie. Dr. Anderton. Anyway, so they were Mitchell Stark and Alyssa Healy were jousting playfully at home on a Saturday. Geez, they have a fun life, don't they? Jousting away. I've never thought of us having a joust.
Well, I can imagine they're very competitive people and yes. The jousting could become quite combative.
So are we.
I know, but we wouldn't involve a jousting stick.
Anyway, so the
houses usually limited to a tennis ball at the beach or something,
that's
you know.
True.
The
yeah, that's fun, definitely. So they were jousting playfully at home on a Saturday evening before an escalation compelled Australia's acting cricket captain to intervene. It was quite gory, Healy said on Monday. I've got two puppy dogs that were having a bit of a rough and tumble. Well, that I understand what that is. Got a little bit more than that. And unfortunately, I got my hand in the wrong place at the wrong time. My right index finger took a bit of a battering. I ended up in the emergency room and had some surgery yesterday morning to make sure it's all good to go. The positive sign out of this is there was no bone or tendon damage or rupture. So that's the best possible news. I think there was an artery involved, which probably made it look more like a crime scene than it needed to be. But I think the major important things that will take time in coming back weren't affected, which is great. I won't lie, when I pulled my finger out initially.
What? Gosh.
I won't lie, when I pulled my finger out. Where'd she pull her finger out?
Out of the dog's mouth.
Oh, right. I thought I was in strife, but I think it's all going seemingly smoothly. I'd say shorter term rather than longer term. I think it's all going to come down to function. And whether I can continue to grip the bat the way I need to, or catch the ball, or hold the jousting stick. You've got a priorities there.
Gosh.
But that's a little community service, I think, that if your two dogs are fighting, that's a very, very common injury that we see.
Mm, and how would you as a behaviourist recommend that people separate their dogs in that sort of situation?
Oh, go out the front door. Just walk away. No. Well, very carefully. It's a really common thing. It happens in the park a lot with two dogs getting a fight and owners run in and quickly want to grab it. You know, they want to grab around the head area generally or grab collars, you know, try and separate them. And it's very, very common for redirect aggression to occur. Yeah. And look, I say to owners, it's better if you can get something in between the dogs. So, you know, if they've got a lead on, obviously fantastic, grab the leads. If you can put something between them, like even if, you know, you're sort of getting a stick or a piece of wood or a pillow or a large blanket or something like that, a broomstick, trying to separate them at a distance from you because they're very quick to turn around and sort of jump on you. And if you really have to, then you can try, you know, grabbing a back leg or something like that, try and separate them like that. But even that's fraught with danger.
Yeah,
it's very,
very,
very difficult. Yeah, you can try, you know, water, putting water on them, you know, bucket of water. Hose them, you know, it's a frantic time. So your adrenaline, the owner's going, because when dogs fight, if you've never seen a dog fight, it's real. It's intense.
Yeah.
It's just like it's on. Like you're wow. And both the dogs that are fighting, their adrenaline's going as well. Mm. So the the chance of me biting you is really, really high as Alyssa has found.
Yeah.
So,
and I think as you say in that actual situation, you're really just acting on instinct.
Mm. Oh, totally.
And it almost would pay to think about what you would do in that actual situation. Mm. If you've got a couple of dogs, or if you would, you know, go to the park where that's a possibility that you might be involved in something like that, to have had a think about what you would do in that situation. And I mean, obviously, you know, Healy and Stark are professional sports people who really can't afford to sustain a significant hand injury. No. But then who can? You know, you can't afford to sustain a hand injury. Oh, that's, you know, a lot of people use their hands for their work, and your hand injuries can be so debilitating. Mm. And if that gets infected, if that's not treated properly, if you need it.
Infection's a big risk, oh, yes.
And you need to go to the ED, and, you know, that's time, it's money, all of those things. It's just, it's best to just avoid it at all costs. Yeah,
probably Alyssa and Mitchell's circumstance, I would have suggested putting on some cricketing batting gloves.
Yes.
And then either grabbing the jousting sticks and trying to separate the dogs that way, or a bat. I'm sure they've got a couple of cricket bats lying. To use as a weapon, but to try and just prise between the two dogs to separate them.
But I thought they had the perfect implement there. They had the jousting sticks.
Yeah, the stick. I know. Ready to go.
If they were actually truly jousting.
Maybe they could have just thrown the stick and one of the dogs, oh, stick.
Yes.
Or a
cricket pad.
Yes.
Because I think she's a batter.
Right.
She's a batter. Whereas he'd just be piffing, you know, cricket balls at them, perhaps to distract them.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, possibly. She goes on, having battled through this year's Ashes tour with a fracture in her left index finger, Healy said she had asked the surgeon whether it would be possible to operate on both at once. I did joke yesterday with the surgeon if he could fix my left one as well, which has been a bit grumpy as well, Healy said. But unfortunately, he said, I might need both hands to be able to wipe my bum if I go to the toilet. So he left that one alone. Just did the one that needed immediate attention.
Oh,
well, where's Mitchell in all this? He could have assisted, surely. Isn't there? No, is that going beyond the husband-wife situation? Do you think?
Well, I hope you don't get a hand injury.
Point taken. All right.
I want to be called up before you turn about 70.
It's like when I had my shoulder reconstruction. It's like, thankfully, that was I still had one hand then, because I remember the surgeon saying to me, oh, hey, how you placed there? Answer.
Well, I had to, with the shoulder, I did have to put your deodorant on and your socks and shoes and stuff for quite a while. So I'm glad it didn't.
Go to the little room as well.
Yes, yeah, I'm pleased about that.
As for Misty and Millie, the two Staffordshire Terriers, the previous war footing has been replaced by a more familiar, peaceful state of affairs. The good news is we're still friends, Healy said. They were probably a little bit worse for wear than what I was, but we're still friends. We were all sat on the couch last night together and debriefed the situation, and we're all getting along fine. That's an interesting point, because I did have a client, I've had clients come in before who've got concerned that they've been injured separating a fight with their dog. They've been bitten quite badly, and they've come in thinking that the dog now, you know, the whole theory of, oh, it's tasted blood.
Oh.
Now it's going to attack me at other times. And it's very comforting to people sometimes to say, no, it's actually just a redirected aggression.
Yes.
Adrenaline was going. It doesn't mean that you're going to walk in the front door and suddenly, ha ha, I'm going to nail you from out of the blue. So it's owners do worry about that a little bit, but there is no link between redirected aggression and any sort of other aggression necessarily towards kids, our other dogs, animals. The thing I'd be worried about is, though, what triggered the fight in the first place?
Yes.
You know, sure, that the dogs are obviously wanted the better jousting stick over the other one. That's understandable, but what really caused the fight in the first place? I'm a bit concerned. Two similar sized dogs. I think that's not the last we're going to hear about. And look, Alyssa, you know where I am. I'm Port Melbourne Vet Clinic. If you need a little bit of advice, I'm certainly happy to assist with some behavioural advice if you need it.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, Australian captain. Very, very happy to help an Australian cricket captain. So there you go. A little bit of in that story, I think, for the listener out there.
Yes, for sure.
Mm. Now, I'll go on to the disclaimer. All advice on this show is general in nature, so please consult your veterinarian before following any advice for your pet. We do our best to provide the most up-to-date information, but as veterinary medicine is continually advancing and changing, please let us know if we have missed anything. You can send us an email, or maybe if you've got a question about redirected aggression between some dogs, certainly let us know. This was an article that was in The Guardian as well. Now, I think I sent this to you, but I'm not sure if you've read it. It's about a really good article about money spending on pets and the cost of pets and the mental health as well that goes with that with veterinarians as well. Oh. So it's in the Guardian newspaper. It's titled Loyal, Cute and $50,000. We would do anything for your pets, but what if we can't afford it? It's by Anne Spargo Ryan. And she starts, twice a week I've been taking my dog down the road for a 10-pack of chicken nuggets. We sit in the car park at Macca's and have a bite to check if it's hot before passing them across to her. She knows the routine. She knows the smell when we arrive and the sounds of the machines. And she knows that before we can get to the drive-thru, we have to stop at the vet to have her bandages change.
Oh.
So I really like that. It's a positive reinforcement for the dog for having something perhaps not so nice done at the vet. So we'll try and do that, certainly changing bandages or doing anything with it. One, I'll be trying to feed them treats while we're doing it, have the owner feeding a treat while I'm changing a bandage. Maybe nurses helping me, but the owner's doling out treats, peanut butter, spreads, whatever we've got in the clinic to distract the dog. And then once it's done, you know, I'll give a whole bingo, what do I call it? Yeah, bingo. Just a whole lot of treats. I figure what I call it. And jackpot, a whole jackpot of treats so they know. So this is what she's doing in a sense. It's a little bit delayed. But I'm sure the dog would, you know, it's a clever dog, obviously, and would associate the 10-pack of nuggets with the sweet mustard sauce, I imagine. Yeah. Couldn't have the sweet and savvy onion in that one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wouldn't. I think that's a great idea, but, I'd be worried about dogs eating too much of that sort of stuff.
Oh, no, I think that's all right. I've been doing it for a while by the sound
of it. That sounds good.
I do this because she loves nuggets, but also because despite me my asking nicely that she please stop, my dog is slowly dying. For 13 years, Josh has been my shadow. Every time I turn around, I trip over her. She gets clipped by the wheels of my computer chair and rushes to join me in the bathroom. At night, her soft grunts float up from the floor next to my bed. One morning 3 months ago, I called Joss for breakfast and she didn't come. I knew the only reason would be because she couldn't. I found her in the living room. She was trying to stand up, but her back legs weren't moving. I wrapped her in a blanket, told her she was brave and lifted her into the car. While I cried and drove, she pushed her nose into my elbow. She underwent surgery, which went as well as it could have, but her long-term prognosis is not good. Our vet Dan says we still have a few good months together, maybe even six. Every day Josh seems a little slower than the one before. Her days of running and playing long past, and most of her time is spent sharing a new orthopedic bed with a small cat. When I've told friends and family about Josh, their first reaction, even before "oh no," is to lament the cost. While I'll do anything to help her, money is finite and my buffer is waning. I have one big bill left in me and then I'll have to stop and that will be the end. Then it goes on to talk about a vet mental health crisis. So Dr. Sophie Putland was a gentle, empathetic person whose love of animals trumped all else, her dad, Gary Putland, said. There was never any question that she would become a vet. She was the vet you wanted at your side when your pet was ill, Gary told the ABC earlier this year. Now, Sophie Putland was a Melbourne vet who unfortunately committed suicide maybe a couple of years ago now. A lot of us around Melbourne knew her.
Oh, that's so tragic.
But after years of working under increasingly stressful conditions, an altercation with an aggressive client was the last straw for Sophie. Her dad says her incident was with a male who was making unreasonable demands on her and then just absolutely lashed out. The owner of the clinic was fantastic with her, but I think the damage had been done. Within weeks, Sophie had taken her own life, and she's not alone. In Australia, vets are 4 times more likely to suicide than the general population, and nearly 70% of them have lost a colleague or a peer this way. And that's certainly the case. You'd know vets that have committed suicide.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very... very sad. Through the organisation Sophie's Legacy, Putland is now working to change the public's mindset about vets, to treat them like humans. Last year, the group surveyed vets to find out why their mental health was suffering so badly. The top issues were things like unreasonable demands by clients, and snide comments, often about costs, Patland said. The one which we're really surprised by was client abuse. He says vets are copying aggressive, sometimes violent behaviour from clients, and the survey showed it's often linked to bill shock. Vet care is objectively expensive, especially when compared with our healthcare. Bills often come with little notice and require immediate payment. Add in the cost of living crisis and these bills can be life-altering. Putland told a recent New South Wales parliamentary inquiry into vet workforce shortages that clients often expect animal health care to cost the same as that for humans, which is free or subsidised by Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
We need to set that expectation that when you buy a pet, it could be costly, he says. Then the article goes on to say, what does a dog really cost? A 2021 report found Australian households spend just over $3,200 a year per dog on average. That's not including the initial cost of purchasing the dog. So some of the dogs, the purebred dogs, you know, 10 grand. You can, sort of a purebred dog. Finnish Lapphunds, which is what Joss was, have a life expectancy of 15 years, which roughly makes Joss a $50,000 investment, which that's really hard to tell people when they've just got a new puppy that, you know, you potentially need quite a bit of money for any, you know, eventualities that, that might occur in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Diana Barker, the president of the Australian Veterinary Association, which contributed to the report, says it's important to realise that these costs vary significantly over a pet's lifetime, largely coming at the beginning and the ending. With puppies, you've got all the preventative care costs, vaccinations, health checks, then you've got food, vaccination, health checks, I said that, parasite control and training. So for the first 1 to 2 years of their life, there are significant costs. Think up to $6,000 in the first year alone, according to this government to the government budgeting website. Things get better for a while at least. After the first 2 years come the easy years, Barker says, and then as they get a bit older, things do start to go wrong. Different breeds can be predisposed to specific challenges. German Shepherds have bad hips. Bulldogs and other brachycephalic breeds, the breeds with the pushed-in noses, can have respiratory issues. Cocker Spaniels can have lots of other issues. Just like us, a dog might need scans, daily medication, surgeries, or even hospital care. Unlike us, there's no government program in place to offset the cost. Dr. Barker says the breed we choose can play a substantial role in the cost of caring for a dog over its lifetime. She mentions the popular French Bulldog as an example. We know that they have issues with their airways, can have breathing difficulties as they get older. They also can have spinal malformations and problems. Same with Dachshunds. They've got those really long spines. Marty Lacey, a nurse who lives on Kangaroo Island, understands this all too well. In 2018, she and her husband Craig brought home Frank, our baby, a red Dachshund puppy. He needed an osteotomy at 6 months, she tells me. That's where they cut their bone in half. So an osteotomy is often done on the front legs of dogs, particularly dogs like Dachshunds that have some bone abnormalities, some growth plate abnormalities, so they need a cut in their bone. The operation was only the beginning of Frank-related expenses. Over his lifetime, Frank faced snake bites, stomach obstructions, and the consequences of eating things he shouldn't. Lacey says they ended up paying upwards of $20,000 in vet bills, a cost for which they had budgeted and carefully saved. The cost of pet insurance with Dachshunds was ridiculous, she says, so we thought if we put the money that we put into pet insurance into our own separate Frankie fund, then we would have it for when we needed it. She and Craig also had conversations about potential future costs, such as disc operations, a common requirement for Dachshunds. My husband always said that if it came to that, we'd probably have to say goodbye because we just could not afford that operation.
Mm.
And that operation can be around sort of 15 grand, depends a little bit on you know what state you're in. It's such a hard decision to try to make. I can't even imagine what vets go through when they've got someone in front of them saying, I can't afford it, but I don't want my dog to die. As hard as they are, these types of conversations are much better to have in advance, Barker and Putland says. As well as putting aside funds each week for your pet's future healthcare needs, it's important to have upfront discussions about what you might do in different scenarios. A vet can give you an idea of the potential health issues ahead. And that's really hard to do, you know. If you've got someone who's just spent 15 grand on their French Bulldog puppy and I'm there saying, well, can have breathing issues, you know, can have back issues, they have vertebra problems, you know, that are congenital, they're born with, can have skin allergies, they can have ear problems, they can have tail issues, they can have skin fold issues, they can have eye problems. So imagine saying that when you've just brought your 8-week puppy for the vet to check and I'm listing off all the things that are going to potentially go wrong with it, they're not going to come back and see me.
And I think that there, I mean, this issue is obviously multifaceted, but herein lies one of the really difficult things for vets is that why is that your responsibility? Mm. I mean, obviously, as a professional, qualified veterinarian, you are going to highlight those things, but is the onus not on the breeder to let people know, buyer beware, this is what you're getting yourself into, purchasing a pup of this breed, or for owners to actually research that stuff themselves as they're taking on a pet like that to actually understand some of the issues that that animal might face?
Well, I would certainly love if people came to me and said, I'm thinking about getting a French bulldog. What do you think? Mm. What are the potential problems they're going to get before they bought it? I would love that.
And I mean, look, sort of thing. If that person is informed and they still want to take on that risk, they've done the cost-benefit analysis and the risk assessment, and they're happy to hold that risk, that's fine. But that shouldn't be transferred to you. The consequences of taking on that risk shouldn't be transferred to you as far as abusing you when things go wrong.
Well, I think, and you mentioned the breed as well. I think breeders, my feeling, some breeders are amazing.
Yes.
But some breeders there are that will openly lie to owners. You know,
yeah.
None of my dogs ever need a airway surgery. I've heard that from French bulldog breeders before. No, we don't breed dogs that need airway surgery. None of mine need it. So they come in to me and I say, well, your dog needs airway. No, the breeder said it doesn't need it.
No.
And they never need it. It's like, well, you know, sure. I've got a few years of vet experience behind me, but then I've got another 200 years of vet, you know, veterinary profession behind me as well. Sure, the breeders bred lots, but I don't think they're always particularly honest with certain situations.
No,
definitely.
And I think you can sort of see where breeders are coming from. I did a lot of work with breeders in my sort of career, particularly in relation to von Willebrand's disease, and there were many breeders that I worked with who were really proactive about breeding it out of their stock. And what there just seems to be something that's quite incongruous with wanting to have your puppies out there, you know, being bought and enjoyed in families, but yet not wanting them to be the best versions of a dog, of a breed that you can actually put out there. And if you actually, if the breeder is proactive about eliminating such issues from their stock, they can actually, that's a point of difference. They can say, my dog does not have, my stock do not have, my puppies do not have von Willebrand's disease, or my stock don't have hip dysplasia, you know, whatever the trait is. And so, you know, it would be good if breeders were a bit more proactive about that, but some of them are just in it for the money.
Well, that's right. If you're getting $15,000 for a dog and you've got a waiting list that's 5 years long,
there's no motivation. Why
do you need to change? I guess I don't know. But no, I'm not trying to pat on all breeders. As like you said, there's certainly some wonderful breeders out there, but certainly trying to find, weed out good from bad is very, very difficult to do. So,
and once people are emotionally attached and that pup is part of the family.
It's definitely not going back, for sure.
No.
So the pet owner's dilemma. When our first vet first called to tell me Joss had two types of cancer, he apologised 14 times. That's certainly something I feel when I tell owners that their pet's got a terminal illness. I certainly feel, I shouldn't feel, but I do say sorry a lot. You know, it certainly rings true with me. It's horrible to give that diagnosis to an owner. Hesitantly, Dr. Dan outlined three different treatment options ranging from about $2,000 to $7,000. He acknowledged it was a big expense. What would you do? I asked him. He said, any decision I made would be the right one. I made a mid-range choice based on no veterinary knowledge whatsoever and hope for the best. I've had more than 100 pets in my life. Some have died unexpectedly before I ever got to know them, and others have been gently taken from me by a needle in a small room. In those latter moments, grateful for my vet's reassurance the pet will not suffer, I nevertheless felt angry about leaving with a large bill and an empty carrier. The money is absolutely a factor. Even having saved for this scenario, knowing I've made sure I can afford it, a privilege, it stings to hand it over. But I also wonder if there's more to it than that. Besides the shock to our bank accounts, these bills expose to us a wholly unwelcome reality, one no amount of planning can change. We have to lie to ourselves to bring home an animal and risk loving it with our whole heart. Denial is essential. It is also incompatible with thinking ahead. Putting in money aside requires an acknowledgement of the morbid truth of pet ownership, the heartbreak. They're with us for a glorious flash and then they're gone. All we can do is treat them with kindness. Be ready to help them with their pain and with a bit of forward planning, hope to make the end as beautiful as the beginning. And if any of that stuff sort of upset anyone, certainly the Crisis Centre Lifeline, 13 11 14, certainly touch base with them if that's, you know, upsetting for you or for anybody that's listening, whether it be a vet or somebody in the veterinary profession or somebody who's missing their beloved pet.
Yes.
But it's a really difficult thing that with owners so much demand on us vets, and a lot of the problems we do get is money related.
Yes.
Certainly when I was a younger vet, it really stressed me a lot talking money with owners, you know, realizing that it's a business that you know that vets need to make some money to put, you know, to feed their families, to look after their families. It's a profession. It's not really something that's funded by the government.
No.
And there are times when I've had owners that genuinely can't afford, you know, the treatment I've recommended, and we still get owners in Port Melbourne that have some, you know, some constraints as well, and I'll always now try and work within their constraints, but it still doesn't, you know, stop owners, and particularly I think emergency vets get it a lot where, yes, you know, it's a sudden injury or something that's happened to their pet, and it's after hours, and there's just no way the owners can afford it, and the vet's got to tell them, well, you know, unfortunately, you know, euthanasia is sometimes the kindest option, you know, or the, yes, only option that's available, and it stings us as vets, you know. A lot of owners say, oh, you're a caring profession, you care about animals, you should do it for free, or why can't you do this? But it just doesn't work like that. It's a very, very difficult situation, and certainly puts a lot of pressure on vets, and possibly a reason why a lot of vets you know, choose to end their life, I guess.
And I think, you know, there's quite a few misconceptions among the general population about the cost of running a veterinary practice. The overheads are absolutely eye-watering.
They're huge, yes.
And then there's the perception that you're collecting all these fees that are lining vets' pockets, and most people in the profession would be earning well and truly less than $100,000 per year. Your starting salary for a vet, new graduate, is about $60,000. Australian dollars. So that is an absolute fallacy. And I guess the other thing,
which in saying that, I mean, that is a very good salary. Certainly no qualms about that at all. It's more, I guess, what we as vets sort of think is that in comparison to perhaps other people who've done 6 years of study, who have a profession, you know, maybe dentists, doctors, that sort of thing, it's not really that big a salary compared to, you know, similar sort of professions. Well, so in saying that, and I don't want people to think $100,000 is not a big salary, because it certainly is a very well above
minimum
wage or average wage, certainly, but it's probably not necessarily commensurate with the stresses that we deal with and the skills and abilities that we need to be a vet.
Yes,
certainly is well in the veterinary profession's understanding is well beyond that sort of pay scale.
Yes, and I think that the point, just to be very clear, the point that I was making is that if you have, say, a practice with five or six vets, the fees are going to paying for all the overheads in the practice. They're not lining the vets' pockets. No. So, you know, that's one thing that's an issue And I think the other thing, just talking about in Australia, we have Medicare, which is, you know, obviously as taxpayers, we pay a levy, which funds the whole health system. And it's interesting when people are used to that and most of the costs of their personal health care are quite invisible and taken care of by the government. So there's lots of times when you perhaps go to the GP and that's bulk billed and maybe you've got to go and have some blood samples collected, you will never see a bill for that set of tests that you've had, which probably costs in the vicinity of $400 or $500 just for general bloods. And then I had a procedure a couple of months ago and it was interesting to get the bill.
We talk about that.
I'd just like to contrast it with the topic here. It was, you know, a very routine procedure and we are fortunate to have private health insurance and it's a part of that private health insurance that there is a gap that we had to pay, which was a few hundred dollars. But it's interesting when you see the anaesthetist bill separately, that was something like $800. Then you've got, they give you a quote for if you had to spend the night in emergency or critical care, or if perhaps things had gone pear-shaped and you needed additional support, all of those things were $5,000. Yet in a veterinary practice, you get the cost of your bloods, your dental, your anaesthetic, your aftercare, all rolled into what might look like quite a high fee. But in comparison to what we receive as people, yes, we do certainly miss that sort of overarching support from our healthcare system.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the pressures that come through, you know, I can understand people are in a stressful situation when those things occur, but, you know, I guess trying to get some education, like with this article, to get it out there that, you know, just take it easy on your vet. They're not in a combative mode trying to make your life terrible.
No.
We are there to help. We're trying to do our best. And certainly, you know, I'll try and work in with, you know, the funds, that if they, you know, they have funds or they don't have funds. But unfortunately, the health, veterinary care costs money.
And I think that, you know, it's very confrontational for vets because their whole goal in working is to support the health of pets who are recognised as very treasured family members. And so to be confronted by a financial issue when you know you are talking about someone's beloved, precious family member, that is just, those are not the conversations that you want to have and they're heartbreaking. They're distressing for everybody. And I guess that article's really asking people, pet owners, just to be aware that these things do happen and it's not the vet's fault.
Exactly. We're humans like everyone else. And it certainly hits us hard, certainly when people are really upset and even doing euthanasia with owners crying, it does make us tear up as well. So, so interesting sort of thoughts. If you have any thoughts or comments, certainly on that, I like some of the ideas there of understanding that it's going to cost money having a pet, that putting aside some money or insurance is a really, really good way to try and mitigate that cost.
And I guess, you know, sometimes, you know, that awareness is a really good thing, but it's often not going to deter people from having that, you know, that particular dog that they've always had or wanting a, you know, special pet and taking on those costs. Certainly if someone had told us how much our children were going to cost us, we wouldn't have said, okay, right, you know.
No, of course not. All those treats at Halloween, we could make some. We could make our own ones. Some little, might get that recipe from Robbie for the oatmeal and bran muffins that he's giving out to the kids as a trick. Have a bite of this, kids. Anyway, if you've got any questions or you've got any comments about what we talked about today, a pretty sort of deep podcast. So, hopefully there's something in it for everyone. You can hit us up at twovetstalkpets@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram. We're on Facebook. And we're also thinking about maybe a viral TikTok, aren't we? We're in the, in, in negotiations, aren't we, with our children?
Yes,
to be allowed to put a TikTok on of the two of us. So look out for that, listener.
It's always quite a reality check for us as parents after many years of cautioning our children about the, about cyber safety and things being forever on the internet. And
nothing
and
like our teenager saying, you know that video will be on the internet forever.
Yes, or don't understand the algorithm, mum. Mm, actually, I don't.
Anyway, that's a little behind the third curtain of our family life. But so look out for a TikTok maybe. I think there's a couple of videos on TikTok, Two Vets Talk Pets. So go and follow us on TikTok and you might see a new one coming up in the not too distant future. Alrighty guys, scratch you later.
Signing off.
Thanks for listening to Two Vets Talk Pets with Lewis and Robbie. To chat further about this week's episode or ask the guys any questions, search Two Vets Talk Pets on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, or send an email to twovetstalkpets@gmail.com. You can find Lewis on Twitter with the handle @vetbehaviorist, and more importantly, as the two pet heroes return to their day job of saving animals' lives, be sure to thank them with a 5-star review on iTunes. Every time you do, a small, cute animal will receive a cuddle.